Am I actually looking at the world with open eyes? And am I, you know, how many questions do I have about the world on a regular basis? So this is really, from our perspective, the foundation to say, you know, the more curious I am as an educator, the more inquiry-based science, the more exciting discoveries I can make with my children.
And it's with that sentiment that the Little Scientists are now running science programs right across Australia for early childhood educators. It's all about professional development in support with the Australian federal government. Let's find out where this all came from.
You're listening to the Physics Ed Podcast. For hundreds of ideas, free experiments and more, go to physicseducation.com.au. And now, here's your host, Ben Newsome.
Yes, welcome again to another Physics Ed podcast. This week, it's all about the little kids, not the big ones this time. It's about ages 3 to 6. What could they be doing in STEM? And certainly a group that's been heavily involved in this are the Little Scientists. And two people who are very much involved in this are Heike Schneider and Sibylla Seidlin. Let's meet them and find out what really drives them.
This is the Physics Ed podcast.
Sibylla, Heike, welcome to the Physics Ed podcast.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
No, thank you. I mean, you're just describing just before we started that your year has become more busier than you could possibly have expected. So thank you for fitting this in.
Thank you. Yeah, it's absolutely, it's been a massive roller coaster that's just going up and up and up.
I thought that's good because roller coasters usually go up and down. So you're just on the crank up. Let's see what happens when it goes down.
That's the next podcast.
Oh, yeah, well, certainly we should tune in on that. And speaking of which, thanks for joining in on this. I mean, we probably should explain what you do. So I guess, Sibylla, for now, what's your thing? What do you do?
So we are the Little Scientists. And at Little Scientists, what we offer is a professional development program for early childhood educators. So it's really about harnessing the so much curiosity that the very young children have. So we focus on 3 to 6-year-olds. And we enable early childhood educators in, turning that curiosity into like inquiry-based, joyful, you know, playful learning experiences.
That would be so much fun, especially being able to show teachers, you know, the ideas that you know that works with young kids. I mean, how long has this been going?
So the idea comes out of, Four Little Scientists comes out of Germany. It started in 2006. When McKinsey, like reps from McKinsey and the Dietmar Hopp Foundation, which is stands behind SAP, so the large IT company, when they came together and kind of thought about where could we best place, you know, like STEM learning, and they saw the gap in the early years, in the 3 to 6-year-olds. So they founded what is called Haus der kleinen Forscher Foundation in Germany in 2006, and shortly after the German federal government came on board, and then it's grown ever since. So it's now in its 11th year, and it's the largest early childhood foundation in Germany for STEM learning. So that's the history, I guess, the big international history. In Australia, we've been here since 2013 through the initiative of Froebel Australia, which is a bilingual childcare provider or, you know, education care service provider. And they knew the program out of Germany and saw the gap again in the Australian market and thought that, you know, like every child deserves early STEM learning, and therefore kind of brought it out to Australia.
Wicked. So I guess a straight up question for me is, like, when we say the gap for early STEM learning, I mean, that could mean a lot of things for different people. I mean, what sort of things are you teaching teachers to be able to do in their own centres?
Heike, do you want to jump in on that one?
Absolutely. Hello. Well, look, probably to begin with, our program has two really important components. The first one is the STEM component. So like Sibylla just said, we are focusing on children's scientific interest. We you know, also want to gain or increase their basic understanding of STEM, enthuse them about these subjects. So it really is about STEM and their excitement about it, and also this I can do this attitude. You know, I have the confidence to be a scientist, to be inquisitive. On the other hand, and that's equally important from our perspective, it is an inquiry-based program. So it's, let's say, combines STEM with inquiry-based learning methods. which means for an educator or a teacher that they, you know, bring together STEM and a very specific educational approach in their daily practice. And that again comes down to a specific view of the child. And we would say this view is, you know, all children are inquisitive, so the curiosity and inquisitiveness is already there. So our job as an educator is really to provide a platform for this learning.
Well, certainly that platform has really driven so far ahead. I mean, all of us say you arrive in Australia in 2013, you know, obviously with high hopes to do great things for early learning centres across Australia, and bang, the federal government gets involved. That's just been awesome. Tell us about what that was like.
Oh, my God. Sibylla, do you want to jump in?
I think we're both like really like when you give us that keyword excited. So it's really it's been amazing. That's why I mean like it's a roller coaster and it's going up and up and we're really going from strengths to strengths. So in 2015, when Malcolm Turnbull announced his National Innovation and Science Agenda, we were lucky enough that finally really like early STEM education made it onto the, you know, like at the forefront also of education and into the National Innovation Science Agenda. And so we received funding through the federal government. And that's just amazing. We're really thankful for that. And that has enabled us to, you know, now nationally roll out a program. And I remember that day so vividly because none of us was in the office. So Heike was, I don't even know where you were, Heike, but we were not
Melbourne.
Yes, we're in Melbourne, exactly. Yeah. And one of our centres, and I was in my other, because at that stage, you know, we were both working still part-time. And when we got the call, I had always imagined us to, you know, when you get the kind of call that you get loud and, you know, it's on a radio station. Yep. And I was just blown away. I just went quiet and I had to sit down and then really got like, you know, hot flushes. So just amazing, amazing feeling.
It's a really
I was actually in a store when Sibylla called me because I had this appointment actually with ABC News in the morning. So we did a short report on Little Scientists, and I was quite nervous about this. So felt a bit relieved after I went to a shop just to treat myself a bit. And then Sibylla called me and told me, and I just dropped everything I had in my hand and ran outside. And I actually I was actually loud. I screamed. So.
And so you should, because all of a sudden you've got this program which obviously was well recognized in Germany. It was doing a fantastic job, and now in Australia you've got this serious platform to roll out some genuine professional development opportunities out for teachers. And we're just seeing this now. I mean, you've got a big conference coming up. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's our very first the inaugural Little Scientist Conference, like solely focusing on early childhood educators in early STEM learning. So this is kind of really unique also like in this space, like in the early learning space. And yeah, that's happening on the 26th of September in Melbourne, and we're super excited for the day. We are also super excited because we sold out. So that was something that we, well, I guess, hoped and had dreamt about, but certainly didn't expect. So we're just really pumped to go to be going to Melbourne next week. And the office is it's an absolute
it's a mess.
It's a bomb explosion, like with all our materials. But we're so excited to share our thoughts, our enthusiasm, our learnings with, you know, with our tribe and our followers and our educators in Australia.
And because this will be coming out in a couple of weeks, we'll almost have to talk in past tense about how great it actually was. But I'd love to know like what happened, what you've got planned within this conference itself that's made people go, you know what, I need to get involved.
Yeah, it's going to be quite an action-filled day, actually. So we start off with a couple keynotes, which are going to be really exciting. We're going to have Kate Highfield speaking about STEM in the digital age, and Marcus Vermann, who's going to, who designs really amazing creative playgrounds. So they are going to talk about that, which is really exciting for us. And then we have four workshops parallel. So, you know, two workshops for people who are quite new to the program, two taster workshops, and then one water and one engineering workshop. For the engineering workshop in particular is for educators who've already been involved in Little Scientists. The other really great thing I wanted to mention earlier is that we are very lucky to have support from our network partners. We will run this these workshops together with a few of their trainers. So, you know, the really great thing about that is that we have support from organizations across the country, and it wouldn't be possible without them. And so we're just really quite excited about that as well.
Oh, I bet. So just say I'm an early learning center, just say I'm in Brisbane, and I've come along to the conference, I've gotten really excited, and I come back to my center to go and change the world in my little place. What are the sort of things that are really fundamental for a preschool, a daycare, a early learning center to really change the way that science is taught for 3 to 6 year olds? What are some things that are just fundamental that every center could be doing even with not that much funding behind them?
Yeah. You know, for me, the really essential thing is not the materials nor the facilities, you know, the environment you have. It's really your own attitude towards these subjects. So as an educator, to ask yourself, how do I feel about these subjects? How do I feel about STEM? Am I confident about it? Do I like it? Am I actually, you know, is my curiosity kindled? Like, am I actually looking at the world with open eyes? And am I, you know, how many questions do I have about the world on a regular basis? So this is really, from our perspective, the foundation. To say, you know, the more curious I am as an educator, the more inquiry-based science, the more exciting discoveries I can make with my children. Just that's why I would begin.
Awesome. So just out of interest, I mean, obviously there's lots of experiments you could be doing with kids, and they don't have to be over the top. I mean, I've seen programs run completely brilliantly just looking at what water does. It doesn't have to be more complex than that. I mean, this is sort of putting you on the spot, I suppose, but what are the sort of experiments that you've seen time and time again that girls and boys just almost lose their mind with enthusiasm with? What are the things that really grab their attention that you've seen?
Look, again, coming from our angle, from the inquiry-based angle, the really great thing is that it comes down to the children's ideas and interests. So there is actually not really one experiment that pops up again and again, but it's more the children's focus. So, for example, speaking of Waterben, I was actually just, I talked to an educator the other week about something they did. So, or actually one of the children in the center. So, you know, it was just playtime and they were all in the garden, and one of the children poured, actually they had a container full of water, and the little boy just stirred the sand he was putting in. And he said that he's actually cooking, because from his perception, when water boils, or like when water bubbles, then it boils and that is cooking. And so the educator then engaged in a conversation with him and asked him, so what exactly happens if you stir it? And over time, they, you know, came to the conclusion that there's a difference between water boiling and bubbling. And so the little boy then added more and more sand to it. And so, you know, there's lots of exploration happening just by that, and also lots of wow moments where they understand a bit more about the world and science. And, you know, the other great thing about that example is also that it started with one little boy, and the other children got really interested, because he then at some point realized, oh, okay, so boiling is not the same as bubbling. And so he wanted to make bubbles in a, you know, different way. So he blew into the bucket with a hose, and that really interested the other children. So they came all over and had a conversation about it. And which then actually ended in several children working on different things. So one group wanted to see how they can move water from one bucket into the other. Some other children wanted to learn more about the, you know, bubble thing, like how can they make bubbles in different ways and so on. So that is really the learning that can happen every day in all different settings and variations.
Well, true. I mean, kids understanding what a solid, a liquid and a gas is quite different amongst each child, definitely. And it's very much a component of the early curriculum as they move into kindergarten all the way through to year two and beyond. To be honest, it comes up in high school again too. It just gets the learning. But I mean, I was just listening to the what had happened with a child pouring sand into a bucket. I know I've watched kids often say to me, myself, when I'm pouring corn flour out for them to make slime, there's often a puff of dust up into the air and the kids will say it's smoking. So the words and the literacy within what they're talking about is just as important as the actual transitions between what they think solid to liquid is and what they think a solid is, what they think a liquid is, the whole thing. It can very much can be based on what they know. And considering they're quite young, they don't know that much, but they try to apply their conceptions of the world using their limited language, and it comes up with some interesting results sometimes.
I think what I'd like to add to this is that's the side of the children, you know, like, and they're how they're kind of like applying their maybe at times limited, you know, like knowledge and words and literacy, but it's expanding so rapidly. But the other side is, and that also goes back to your question earlier, like what should the educator do? It's about what we said earlier. It's about giving the educator confidence in being able to, you know, to teach science or to teach STEM and apply STEM in an early years setting. And one of my, I guess, like aha moments was at a conference that we attended, and I had this educator come up to me and we had this great conversation, and she said, well, we don't do science in our center. And then she goes on about just recently they had floods, man-made floods, so caused by a dam kind of pouring, you know, flooding. And she then talked about how the kids had talked about the rain and where does the water go, evaporation. And then they actually went on an excursion to see the man-made floods. And then she still kind of goes, yeah, but we don't do science. What do you do? And I looked at her. I was gobsmacked. And I said to her, you are totally doing science, you know. You as an educator just need to embrace it. And you have to have that confidence and applying the knowledge and the give it a name as well. So that for me was so important, and that's why I think that is so important for us as little scientists to give language and give a voice to the educators as well about STEM learning.
Yes, absolutely. And also, you know, what I also hear and talk about a lot with educators and teachers is that they think they don't have enough knowledge to teach these subjects. And from our perspective, this is absolutely not the case, because, you know, Ben, you just mentioned that your children's perceptions when, you know, they think that, you know, that something is smoking even though it actually isn't smoke, or it's boiling even though it's actually not hot. The real question is, from my perspective, does the child really need to know the detailed scientific answer at the age of 3 or 4 or 5? So, you know, what from our pedagogical side of things, we would say no, they don't. It's really more about gaining an understanding of the world step by step. And it's okay for the children to have these perceptions. As an educator, it's really more about taking that and slowly guiding them into the direction of potentially the scientific explanation.
Fair enough. And so when you're doing this work with, various early learning centers and things, that's very much in situ in their places of work or at your inaugural conference and that sort of place. Could you imagine being able to go into universities and do the same?
Yes, we are.
No,
absolutely. Yes. No, absolutely. We think that is so important to actually talk to pre-service teachers because they are, you know, like they're just about to enter the workforce. And if we can equip them with this kind of inquiry-based STEM learning, such as the Little Scientist Program provides, wow, I mean, like what a chance. You know, they basically go out there and they're enthusiastic about their profession, and they then take that enthusiasm and that knowledge and they can kind of like infuse it into their workplace that they're entering. So it's such a multiplier. And we definitely, like, we're looking at rolling that out with some of the universities in Australia, amongst which is definitely Chad Sturt.
Yeah, wow, cool. So, I mean, I guess obviously you're on this up and up roller coaster. I'm just wondering where, I mean, this is really hard to say. Okay, get out your crystal balls. where do you think this might lead, considering the how well you've really gotten going already in Australia? Where could this go? Could you imagine?
Well,
that's a question, isn't it?
Take my crystal ball, yes. Yeah. We really think that every child in Australia deserves, you know, access to great STEM, early STEM education. So, I mean, like, the wishful thinking would be that really, like, every early learning centre in Australia embraces a program such as Little Scientists and has components of early STEM education already in the 3 to 6 year olds. And it's really important also for the transition into school. And then, you know, I can do all the wonderful programs that are, you know, taught there for STEM learning. So that's really, like, every child should have access to Little Scientists. That would be...
I reckon it'd be fantastic. I mean, I remember you and I think a few others talking when we were all involved in that program with PwC. For those people who don't know who PwC is, so think of PricewaterhouseCoopers, just rebranded. I was just thinking, wouldn't it just be great if you could track students' progress, not within individual programs or individual organizations, just literally what things do they get to be exposed in front of between ages 3 and 18? And actually bring that beyond, I'd love to know what they're exposed to between ages 3 and all the way till they graduate from their first undergraduate degree. It'd be so interesting to see what is the impact, the cumulative impact of all these different outreach programs, enrichment programs, and things that happen within schools themselves. Because let's be honest, schools do a lot of work in-house. I'd love to know just what is that impact over a long term. I don't know how they'd ever string that together. That'd be very interesting to see.
Yes. No, it would be wonderful. And I think that's why we have a really amazing STEM, you know, STEM... community in Australia, you know, like, so we should all kind of like get together much more, and there's so much, you know, like handover areas where we transitioning areas where we can work much closer together. So yeah, for us it's really kind of all of us together kind of, I guess, like changing the future of Australia.
Agreed.
And making
And this is actually one of the reasons, though, that this particular podcast actually exists. I've actually already received one email saying, why are you doing this considering it's not about what physics does? I go, well, hang on, aren't we about learners? So that's exactly what we're doing, is trying to string together some of the programs we've seen so we can let people know that these things actually exist. And I think it's got to be best for the learner and best for everyone overall.
I just wanted to say that's the great strength of our network partner or train the trainer approach as well. Because, you know, we do work with so many organizations across the country that already do have such potential. And, with their help, we just have a much greater chance and also just more strength to really implement that in, you know, that inquiry-based STEM learning in all centers, like Sabina just said. So, we want more of this community spirit, definitely.
Going with community spirit, I mean, obviously part of community spirit is giving and receiving advice. So let's go on the giving advice side of things. If you had to give advice to a pre-service teacher literally about to enter their very first preschool, like next week, what would you say to them in 5 minutes just to settle the nerves and go forth and conquer type thing? What would you say?
In terms of inquiry or in terms of STEM
and inquiry learning, like if you had to give them one bit of sage piece of wisdom, what would you say?
I would probably say, look, regardless of your own experiences in school with STEM, you do not have to be afraid of these subjects. You also do not have to be a scientist or feel like you have a huge amount of knowledge in these subjects. If you do, it's great. If you don't, it's equally great. It doesn't matter. Be curious, be inquisitive, listen to your children's ideas and involve them in the process as much as you can in, you know, all parts of the process of investigation and discovery, and just really work together with your children, and you will be so surprised what you can do together. Yeah, that's what I would say.
Love it, love it, love it, absolutely. And to be honest, I've heard so many people say similar things, to irrespective of their background and what they do. Often it's just, what do the kids want to know?
Yes.
What do they want to understand, and how can you be their guide? I love it. That's fantastic.
Hey, yeah, we call it like embrace the why. That's what I would say. Yeah. No matter where, like embrace the children's why, embrace your own why, because we can't know everything. So reach out. That would be for me as well. You know, don't isolate yourself and don't feel isolated. If at times you do, just reach out. There's like an amazing community out there and amazing programs, amazing forums, you know, and ask your questions and be open to listen.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much, Sabella and Heike, for popping on the Physical Ed podcast. I know you've got a lot of stuff going on, and look, so all the best from all of us here at Physics and beyond for your upcoming inaugural conference. I know you're going to rock it, and I know that you're going to have a lot of fun too at the upcoming Education Changemakers conference as well in Melbourne. Geez, you've got a lot of conferences on.
I
know you're going to have a lot of fun. Look, but hey, thanks very much for popping in. I know you're very busy people, but I know there'll be some early learning teachers around who'd love to get in touch with you. How could they do that?
They can definitely check us out on the internet. So our web page is www.littlescientists.org.au. But we're also on social media, of course. So check us out on Facebook. Just look for Little Scientists Australia, as well as LinkedIn and Instagram. And I guess our hashtags, which is Zissa would be part of our team, would be very proud of me. It's hashtag early STEM and also hashtag little scientists.
That's right. Don't forget your Instagram, Twitter, and Snapchat and everything else that you hashtag with. Why not? Well, thank you very much again. Much appreciated. And go forth and make science awesome for young kids.
Thank you, Ben.
Thank you, Ben.
This is the Physics Ed Podcast. We're all about science, ed tech, and more. To see 100 fun free experiments you can do with your class, go to physicseducation.com.au. That's physics spelled F-I-Z-Z-I-C-S. And click 100 free experiments.
Yes, thanks so much, Sabella and Heike, for jumping on this podcast. I know you're very, very busy, especially when delivering programs right across Australia. Hey, listeners, what were you thinking about? I'd love for you to drop me a line, send us an email, send us a quick text or something through our Contact Us page. I'd love to know what you're thinking. And hey, what was I thinking during this? There's certainly a lot of learnings, and here are my top three. Number one is very much true for all educators, but tell you what, as early educators, targeting misconceptions, finding out what kids actually think is so important before you go ahead with your lesson. So, hey, ask those kids, especially 3 to 4 year olds. I'm going to tell you, I've got a 5-year-old son. He asked so many questions. Only yesterday he was asking questions about how shadows work. Well, here's the thing. Little kids will always ask sort of questions that's based around what they think, and really finding out what kids know is so important. Actually, if you're wondering, jump on our website, type in misconceptions, and you'll find a huge list of different ways that kids think about the weather, how the sun works, all this stuff. Misconceptions exist right from, you know, like the young age, right through adulthood. Check that out. Hey, learning number two. Identify your why. Sabella talked about this. The more curious you are as an educator, the more the kids will follow you. And I really agree with this. It comes down to enthusiasm. So work out why you're doing science, what's the point of it, and then get curious, get excited, and the kids will certainly follow you without a doubt. Hey, number three, embrace the kids at this age love science. And that's it. It doesn't even matter if you don't use the word science. So ideally, if you can bring in the word science, it's probably good from a literacy point of view. But kids are simply just about exploring and discovery. It's okay if you don't feel that confident. Just take little bits at a time and your confidence will grow.
Thanks for listening to the Physics Ed Podcast. Love your science? We do too. Here's this episode's education tip of the week. Grab your pencil and get ready to make some notes.
And this week, it would be remiss of me not to talk about science you could do with young kids, with early learners. So grab your pencil, grab your pen, grab your crayon. We are talking with young kids anyway. These are the experiments that you can definitely do. So by the way, if you jump on our website and type toddler, you will find links to this as well. So here we go. Here's the first one, which certainly grabs kids' attention. Create rainbow flowers. So what I mean by that is get some clear jars and some clear cups and get some food colouring in them and then get some white flowers. Put them in, you know, cut their stems off, cut the stems off the flowers and put them into this food colour, and through transpiration, food colouring will go up through the stems and into the white flowers and start to colour them. Now, by the way, you can use this for older kids. You can definitely talk about this in primary and high school in regards to the vascular bundles that are in plants. With young kids, is simply there is liquid in plants and they get moved from the roots up to the leaves. And in this case, roots up to the petals, and the kids can definitely see it. Of course, the colours definitely work. Hey, try splitting the stems in half and putting them into different pots, one in red, one in blue, and watching half the flower getting red and half the flower getting blue. They will love that. Hey, here's another experiment. Do the classic volcano. Now, what I mean by that is get a lump of sand, you put a cup in the middle of the volcano, pour in some water, some bicarbonate soda, and some detergent, and you're almost ready to run your volcano. In a separate cup, put some red food coloring and some vinegar, and simply pour that red colored vinegar into the crater of your volcano where you have your bicarb soda and water and detergent. Now, the reason why you have detergent in that is it'll actually trap the carbon dioxide and it'll make the the magma slash lava as it leaves the volcano to become kind of bubbly and flow out. It's a bit like, you know, how a volcano actually erupts in the real world. Kids do love that. Use a sandpit of your early learning center. It works a treat. Hey, number three, get some Skittles and do some color mixing. And the way you do this is get a white plate. You know, like the reason why you use white plate is because of the contrast. Fill the base of it with water and add a couple of different Skittles. Let the Skittles color dissolve outwards until the colors meet. And the reason that's useful is not only do the kids get to watch the color, you can introduce the word dissolve versus melting. Trust me, kids get dissolving and melting easily confused. And in this case, when you melt something, you add heat. And in this case, you've added a sugary thing into water and the sugar is breaking up and mixing through a liquid. So there is a difference between heating and dissolving. But here's the deal. Your Skittles are dissolving into your water and the colors meet in the center. And then you pose to the kids, what will happen if you put a sugar cube right in the very center? And the kids will have their guesses and now they can watch what happens. And you know what? I'm not even going to say what happens. Go and try the experiment yourself. Hey, another one. Kids love slime. Go and get some maize starch, some corn flour. And by the way, when you buy corn flour, you can buy corn flour which is made out of wheat and it will not work. In this case, look on the side of the box. It'll say maize and M-A-I-Z-E. You really, after that, you have to cornstarch, also known as maize flour or maize starch. Add a bit of water and you've got yourself a slime, a non-Newtonian fluid. And tell you what, when you do this, get the kids to press the corn flour and water mix. And the more they press it, the harder it goes. And by the way, you can color the water as well, and you get blue or red or pink or whatever slime. It looks very, very cool. Other thing you could do is make some colored shadows. Darken your room, put as much butcher paper and stuff on the windows as much as possible, and use torches, like flashlights. Put your flashlights with some cellophane over them with red, green, and blue cellophane. So red for one, blue for another, green for the other one. And get the kids to create colored shadows. That is very, very cool because, yeah, you can put the colors together and you will get white, but now put your hand in front of those colored lights, you will get shadows behind your hand, and kids really, really, really like that. Hey, another one, prove that air takes up space. In this case, get yourself a ping pong ball or something else that will float, put it into some water, turn a clear cup upside down on top of the ping pong ball and push down. Ask the kids, what will happen to the ping pong ball? Will it stay at the top of the water, go to the middle of the water, or go to the bottom of the water? The kids will have their guess, and then you just do the experiment and show that air takes up space. The reason why you can show that is that as you push down with your cup, your ping pong ball will go all the way down to the bottom. Hey, there's lots of other experiments you definitely could be doing with toddlers, and I really, 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 really suggest that you jump on our website because there are over 150 science experiments on our site which are freely available, and many of them are certainly worthwhile for early learners. So there you go. That's our Ed Tip of the Week. Let's start doing some STEM with young kids.
This is the Physics Ed Podcast. We're excited about science. Grab a copy of our new book, Be Amazing, How to Teach Science the Way Primary Kids Love, from our website. Just search Be Amazing Book. It's available in hard copy and ebook. Go to physicseducation.com.au.
That's physics spelled F-I-Z-Z-I-C-S.
One of the things that came up in our discussions with the little scientist was the issue that is often quite common. Do we have the confidence to teach the science? We have to. And I totally get that. And look, one of the things that can actually drive this is occasionally, well, the fear of failure, of occasionally having stuff messed up when you're doing your science experiment with the kids, even young kids. You know what? It's actually a really good learning tool. And way back in episode 1, we spoke with Adam Selinger from the Children's Discovery Centre in Wollongong. And he had a bit of something to say about that.
So when things go wrong, and I say when things go wrong, you can talk your way out of it, and you can say, and this is what happens when, blah, 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 and you can talk, and that is then part, it's a valid way to run a lesson. Because things are not always going to go right, and it's good if you can perhaps even say, hey, this didn't go right, who's got ideas, what did I do wrong? Sometimes in my shows, workshops, I will deliberately make things fail by deliberately leaving things out. Because I want these people to be thinking. I also want them to understand that even a so-called expert, and they'll perceive me as that if I'm in front of the class, will get things wrong.
Yes, there you go. There's another tip. Why not deliberately make your lessons fail? And you know what? Get the kids, even little four-year-olds, can actually work out where you've messed up. And you know what? That means that they're watching and they're thinking critically. And that's so, so important.
Thanks for listening to the Physics Ed Podcast. Sign up now for our fortnightly email newsletter. It's loaded with details on new experiments you can do, STEM teaching articles, new gadgets, exclusive offers, and upcoming events. Go to physicseducation.com.au. Scroll to the bottom and add your email.
And that just about brings us to the end of yet another Physics Ed podcast. Hey, check out next week. We are speaking with Ali Watson, the co-founder of Code Like a Girl. This is such an amazing discussion when it comes to actually getting kids really involved in coding and everything tech with someone that very much works in the industry before setting up her own business around getting girls into coding. It's brilliant. And until then, I hope your classrooms are awesome. Make them as informative and as interesting as possible. You've been speaking with me, Ben Newsom from Physics Education, and you've been on the Physics Ed Podcast. I'll catch you next week.
You've been listening to another Physics Ed Podcast. We're excited about science. Subscribe to us on iTunes to download the next episode as soon as it's released. And don't forget, for hundreds of ideas, free experiments, our new Be Amazing book, and more, go to physicseducation.com.au.